Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
I got I lost track of time there before doing this podcast because I was working on a shortcut. Working on a shortcut.
Working on the old shortcut mines.
Down in the deep down in the shortcuts mines.
Gotta find those actions. Gotta mine those fresh variables.
Well, it's that thing where you make a really crappy shortcut just for you, and then you realize that you should give it to your friends, and then you have to fix things in it. So, like, you texted me. I got a text from you while waking up this morning that was like,
"You're welcome."
Your shortcut didn't work because there's a space in the path name, and I'm like, "Oh, geez." So I put quotes in all of the places where there have to be quotes, so that the path names with spaces don't anger the fragile Unix system. Anyway,
yeah.
So I did that, and then I did some other. I upgraded it in a bunch of places. So I'll send you this one too. This is me playing with the Whisper AI transcription app that runs on your Mac, and will use all the cores. I'll send you a new version soon. It should not be broken with spaces. So that's good.
And you're welcome.
It does actually look and see how many performance cores you have.
Oh, good. That's just what I need.
Well, and
it sets
the thread number to that number minus one, which seems to be, at least in my testing, the one that is the most effective. Anyway, it's fun. And the new version lets you pick what kind of transcript you want, whether you want a text file or an SRT or whatever, all the formats that are available. See,
one of these days you're just gonna start making apps, Jason. That's the logical next step.
I just don't know
how. Yeah, but I mean, you're kind of doing it already.
I am a beloved developer of things that show up in the services menu in the Finder. That's really my
your niche.
Yeah. So I like those. Those are the ones that I like. So anyway, I'll send you the transcriptor 1.1 pretty soon. But I can't
transcriptor.
Finish it right now. Because
more than meets the eye.
I'm on a podcast, you see. So
that's right. You're busy.
Right,
we're doing other stuff.
Can't
try to stay with the topic at hand.
So when last we spoke on this podcast, we pretended that we didn't have Mac hardware.
Oh, our acting. Did we get Oscar noms? Did we? We did not.
I should have had my close personal friend Jennifer Aniston hold a screening of our podcast at her house. Mm-hmm.
There you go.
That's a reference. Some people will get that reference. But I didn't, so I didn't get nominated for my amazing, one of the most amazing performances. We didn't get nominated.
Thank you.
Best lying about review hardware. But we didn't lie. We just didn't disclose that we had it. I'm really looking forward to reading the reviews next week, I think we might have said.
Oh, I'm really, really looking forward to writing the review.
No, that's not what we look forward to.
Well, we look forward to being done with writing.
Done with writing that. Yeah. Anyway, you got a Mac Mini now, so, you know, that's good.
Yeah, that's right. Problem solved. Everyone kept asking when I was buying it, and I was like, I have it right here.
Yeah. We did a video about it. We're going to put that audio of the video at the end of the podcast. So if you're a podcast listener and not a video watcher,
that's a
fine.
Feature for you.
We'll put that audio on and you can listen to it after we're done. We talked for an hour about it and answered people's questions, and maybe you'll like that. And that'll be on at the end of this podcast, but not before. Any ongoing thoughts about that stuff now that we did our video and we got it out there in the world and all that on Tuesday?
You know, I think the biggest question that remains.
Monday.
What day is it?
I don't even know.
What are days?
Monday and Tuesday were very, very busy days for me.
Yeah. The biggest lingering questions with the Mini, I think, are not so much of the. Well, there's some of the technology, right? The stuff that they've been talking more in the last couple of days about the various storage configurations and the impacts on speed, which is the thing that we kind of expected after the whole thing with the M2 MacBook Air, and the base level has. You know, a slightly lower, it only uses one NAND chip, so therefore it has a slower SSD time. I have two feelings about this. One, it's like, yeah, I guess, if you're buying a computer and you think you're getting speed X and you only get fraction of speed X, I could see being peeved. But at the same time, as people have pointed out, these are not performance things you necessarily even notice, at least in daily activity. And to me, it's a little bit like complaining that your car, which was advertised to go 180 miles per hour, only goes 120 miles per hour. And it's like, well, A, you should not be driving that fast. Or if you are driving that fast, you're doing it because you're in like a very specialized, like on a track or something, right. You know, or something very specialized. So Does it have a real world performance? And thus, if it doesn't have a real world performance, does it matter? And yeah. I don't know, but my inclination is probably not for 95% of people or more.
I think that's it. I think, is there something here? Yes. Has it been, one, blown completely out of proportion? Absolutely, right? Because there are people out there, first off, there are people out there who, like, whatever the latest Apple gate is, they know that that will get them viral views on whatever.
Gets all the clicks.
Or, yeah, exactly. So that's going to happen regardless. I saw somebody this week, I think maybe it was even in a Discord I'm in, I'm not sure whether it was our member Discord or another one, who basically said, for the M2 to be slower than the M1, is outrageous. And I thought to myself,
outrageous.
I thought to myself, well, probably almost nobody if it is going from the low-end storage configuration M1 MacBook Pro to the low-end storage configuration M2 MacBook Pro 1, right? Like that seems unlikely. And second, they would then have to be somebody for whom SSD speed, they were using all of it, and now everything is slower and they're using less of it. And it's just, you know, it's a real thing. And
sure.
I feel like you can just completely overstate what's been going on there.
I definitely get this impetus because I felt the same thing when people were talking about it, and when, of course, I've been, you know, looking at buying one of my own. And it's just the feeling of knowing, right? Like, I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who go like, oh, but I know it's slower. Like, and that, like, there's a psychological effect, which I think is very funny, because I'm finding myself falling prey to it. It's like, oh, but I'll know that it's only got the one. Yeah. Does it matter? It doesn't matter. I know it doesn't matter, but it eats away at your brain there. And, you know, once you have the device and you've used it for a while, you will forget about it. This is the lovely thing that psychologists call cognitive dissonance reduction. You spent the money, you'll be happy with it. It doesn't matter.
I think the validity of it is that there are computer nerds who are pointing out that Apple made a trade-off of the density of the SSD in order to have, I think, more max SSD, or maybe it's because they were being cheap. I don't know, but basically they've made this decision in the M2 generation to have single banks at low storage capacities and instead of multiple banks, which means you're only using one path instead of the two paths, and as a result, it's half the maximum speed, and that is absolutely a thing that they seem to be doing and that we should note it. And it is hard as a reviewer to note it because, of course, they don't send that one to you.
Right. Yep.
So we have to sort of wait for them to be out in the world and for people to take them apart, because as reviewers, we can't do that. So that's all true. And I think it's worth watching it and paying attention to it and making people aware that when they spend, you know, the choices they make when they configure might impact something beyond what Apple is saying, which is, you know, Apple's happy to tell you that when you go from Pro to Max, you double your memory bandwidth, but they aren't going to tell you that when you go from 512 to 1 terabyte, that you're doubling your SSD speed, right? That they don't say. And so
part of me feels like Apple will be happy to just not have specs on its page. We talked about this before, but I think that's in an ideal world. They just have, like, you buy a Mac, and you get it, and you're happy, and there you go. Like, or a minimum of
specs. You could
choose
A or B or C.
Yeah. Yep. We will not tell you the difference between these things.
Oh, no. Good, better, best.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you feel like? Do you feel like best today?
Yeah, so that's, I mean, other than that, I don't feel like there's a lot of lingering stuff to be had about the Mac Mini. I think there is still, you know, some debate about its position in the lineup vis-a-vis the Mac Studio, and not a thing that will be clarified anytime soon unless Apple decides next week to release a new Mac Studio, which I don't think anybody is really expecting. So, you know, it is what it is for the moment. And I don't think it makes a huge difference. I think in most cases, people kind of know what machine suits their needs better. But yeah, other than that, I don't think there's a lot else to say about it that wasn't said in the review. I think that it's, you know, it does what it says on the tin. It is the computer you expect it to be, and I think it's a good iteration.
Sure. And I'm glad people are watching for that stuff. But the outrage is what bothers me, right? Like, whatever. I mean, people get real dramatic about stuff that I think that they shouldn't be dramatic about. But it's right to call Apple out for it and say that you should be aware that this is what Apple is doing.
This is a thing I kind of keep formulating this idea, but have kind of gone around it a bit in circles. But I think there is this huge... I think this is an innate human thing, and even more pronounced in people like us who work with technology for whatever reason, or, you know, are have a mind that embraces technology or the way to make things. But we want stuff to be really neatly categorized, right? There is, you look at it back and you can see these sort of the platonic ideal, right? Is that old 2x2 product grid, right? The Steve Jobs consumer, professional. Sure. Portable desktop. And I think in some ways we long for a simplicity of being able to slot things in these very clear categories in ways it's like, if you want this, you go to this box. If you want this, you go to this box. It doesn't work that way, right? Like, there is overlap. There are places where these things sort of blend together, and it's never as clean as we'd like it to be. But I think we all have this, you're buying a more expensive thing, it should be better. It's like, but it's better. But it's, you know, it's not necessarily better in all the ways. It's just better in most of the ways that will make a difference for you. And it's just product lines, like everything in life, are messy. And they don't always fit perfectly in that grid. I mean, there's a reason that we don't have that 2x2 grid anymore. It didn't even last that long, really, all things considered. But, you know, we're always striving to get back there, I feel like.
Yeah. Also, people don't actually want that simplicity, right? Because they want to be able
right.
to choose.
Yes.
They want they kind of want the illusion of simplicity or of elegance, but that's not actually what they want, because then they would complain, right? Like, because the flip side of it is that people will complain about the fact that, like, now I don't get to choose. I only have this one choice. And it's like, well, okay. I mean, when there's simplicity, that means you don't get to choose. Those are your choices. So I don't know. I'm happy that people are determining what, you know, figuring out what Apple is doing, and that's good. But there's also a lot of faux or misplaced kind of outrage, and some of it is self-serving for people who just want the attention, and some of it is, I don't know what, people who have, I don't actually... If it's not self-serving, I'm a little baffled why you would be like, this is outrageous that this... Maybe you just got excited by the person who wants to make it a big deal. I don't know.
Or you just... Again, I think you just... Yeah, you just... You yearn for that simplicity again.
Yeah,
just
I guess
that's
it. Just
want stuff to fit nicely. And I get it. I totally understand that. I totally get it. But there are always trade-offs. So, yeah, like you said, something to keep an eye on, but not a thing I think that, again, will have a real effect on most people day-to-day.
Right.
What about on the MacBook Pro side? Anything else that needs to get addended to your review?
I would say no. I would say I wish it was a more exciting product, but it's actually kind of delightfully not exciting in that way, right? Where it's literally the old one with the next generation that's a minor next generation kind of thing. I still think there's an interesting question about which chip you should get, just as there is with the Mac Mini, right? The whole idea that it's like, okay, Pro or Max, like buying a Mac Studio last year, Max or Ultra was a pretty clear distinction, but Pro or Max is fascinating, because if you look at the chip, and I did write in my Macworld column this week is about that, and by the way, I'm just going to mention it here, starting with my Macworld column this week and going forward for both of ours. That's a new breaking news. If you're a $6 member, which you are because you're listening to this podcast, our RSS feed and our website will now include, for members only, the entire text of our Macworld columns. You don't actually have to go over to Macworld to read it. It's now a member benefit. Thanks to everybody at IDG/Foundry/Macworld for making that, for agreeing to that when we asked. So in there, I talked about the M2 thing and how they basically like chop the bottom off, right? That's basically the difference between the M2 Pro and the M2 Max. Is there's like a bottom part that's got more GPUs and video encoders and memory connection. And that part is chopped off on the Pro. So you're not getting any more CPUs, which I think is fascinating. Mm-hmm. You're getting more GPUs and more memory bandwidth and you know, another video encode set. But that's it. So I think it's again, this is the story of this product. Again, I feel like it's not about the power, it's about the features, which is the case with the whole right. laptop, is you get a MacBook Pro for the features and not necessarily for the power. I mean, maybe a little bit for the power, but also for the features. And that's actually true from Pro to Max, which is you're really, it's like you're getting it for the GPUs maybe, or you're getting it because you want lots of RAM, and all of those things are just not available on the Pro. So I think it's fascinating, and you know, it's a who chooses a Pro versus who chooses a Max. I hate to keep coming back to this, but I almost think the answer is, you know, if you need a Max, you know. If you're going to order a Max, you know. And if you don't know, then you probably don't even need to bother.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good explanation. It's just, yeah. This is the point where we all really enjoyed the, you know, M1 Apple Silicon transition and the huge benefits we reaped there. But I think we have said repeatedly, you don't get that every time. Like,
right.
It's that you get that once. And then you move into a more incremental series of improvements. And, you know, you might see a bigger jump down the road as it continues to improve its GPUs and neural engines and all that stuff. Or who knows, puts in some other coprocessors that do other specific things that could be sped up. But I think mostly this is kind of what you should expect.
Yeah.
Mostly year over year.
Yeah. I mean, the way Apple's making these chips is very economical. They are... Right, like they're not designing a Pro. Honestly, they're not designing an M2 Pro and an M2 Max. They're designing an M2 Max and chopping the bottom off of it for the M2 Pro. They're making them modular so that they can take pieces off or add them on. And you know, maybe they're building them all as Maxes, and the Pros are the ones where the Maxes are spoiled, so they don't. I mean, I don't know enough about chip
manufacturing. It's very cost efficient.
But they certainly aren't designing four different bespoke chips. That's not what they're doing. They're designing two, I think, essentially. They're designing a Max and a base model. And then the Pro is a subset of the Max. And if we get the Ultra, it's two of the Max. That's it.
Yeah.
So that is... So on one level, there is a lot of choice here. On another level, there's not that much. I mean, there's variation, but Apple is not doing a lot. You're just sort of like varying what's available in the particular box that you're in, which is the Pro Max box, basically. I don't know. It's really interesting. And then you think about M3, and the question is like, what's that going to be based on? Is that going to be based on the new 3-nanometer process? Is it going to be based on a different chip generation than the current iPhone chip generation? Are they going to skip one? You know, they get to make all those decisions now, which is fascinating. And yet, yes, part of me, to bring this all the way back around, part of me thinks that this is more complex than it should be. It is a Pro system. I get it. And they want some build to order, and they want some upsell, and they want to be able to sell. They want to essentially be able to use their defective chips by selling them at a discount. And that's essentially what they're doing
right.
when it's fewer GPUs or whatever, fewer CPUs. But... I don't know. It's fascinating to me. I kind of prefer the MacBook Air, where it's just like, this is what it is, right? Like, just this
yeah.
is what you get. No choice.
Right.
At all.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes sense. I mean, again, I think there is a certain platonic ideal of, you know, what Apple's products are and how Apple puts a product together. And it like, you know, I think it likes to basically say, this is the product you're getting. Here you go. It's a product. It's a complete thing. I actually found this interesting in regards to these increased rumors about the Mac Pro that we've seen come out this week, which are fascinating to me because there's a lot of people who are very critical of what this keeps sounding like, which is that Apple is pulling back on. Not only have we heard they've pulled back on sort of that highest configuration processor, but also on some of the expandability, which does make you wonder, why make this product?
Yeah.
It does. Because the tendency of Apple is to go more and more towards these things that, you know, like an iPhone or an iPad, in the sense of being, it's a complete widget. And yes, you can choose some things like your storage or your RAM or your how many cores you have, but, like, you know, you're not swapping out cards anymore. And moreover, why have, if as we've heard, the chassis is using the same one of the previous Mac Pro,
yeah,
why have all that space if you can't do anything with it? It seems weird.
Yeah, and they you'll be able to do some things with it, but not the same things that you were able to do before. And it is weird. It is weird. It does feel like a retrenchment. And I wonder if they... I do wonder if there is a bigger plan for Mac Pro down the road for, like, M3 and beyond, but they also feel the need to just get off of Intel and to ship something.
Yeah.
But if it's sounding like the Mac Pro, when it comes, is really just going to be a Mac Studio with space. Right?
Which is
again, ironic, because a studio apartment doesn't have space. Or I guess that fits.
But a
Pro apartment does. There you go. Yeah. Perfect. This is the Mac. It's the new Mac 2-bedroom.
Mac condo? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. A part of me wonders, like, I mean, A, the GPUs in these things are incredibly powerful. I'm not saying you can't get a more powerful discrete GPU, you know, if you want to get an NVIDIA chip or whatever. But I am surprised that they wouldn't have some facility for being able to plug in graphics cards. I mean, RAM, I understand. You're putting it on the chip. Adding additional RAM, that's just complex and weird.
They can choose to do all of these things. I mean, and I'm sure they've...
Sure.
I'm sure they've investigated them, right? Like, the graphics thing, the problem is that it really does cause a rethink of the whole Apple Silicon architecture. RAM, you could do like a second set of RAM that is beyond the chip, that is fast but not as fast, and have some sort of caching system or something like that. I guess you could, but you're going to lose the benefit of the speedy RAM if you do that. So that's not it. And yeah, so it sounds like what you're really going to get here is storage.
Yeah, right. Which, again, is kind of the least important thing.
And maybe... I do wonder if there might be something that is an extension that is using some of the you know, like an add-on card that adds Apple.
Well, that's
Apple GPUs,
I wondered,
right?
About that, because
Apple,
like,
GPUs.
They went through that whole thing with the Afterburner cards,
yeah,
and all the, like, the architecture of that Mac Pro was incredibly complex, especially compared to the amount of time it actually was kind of irrelevant, I guess, for lack of a better word. They spent a lot of time being like, we're bringing back the Mac Pro, it's gonna have everything you want, and they rolled it out and people are like, wow, yeah, this does have everything. And they're like, and we're moving to a totally new processor architecture, this is obsolete, literally like a year after they shipped it, which is wild. So I am fascinated to see what that product ends up being. I feel like in certain degree there's a self-fulfilling prophecy angle happening there too, where Apple will be like, well, hey, we made a new Mac Pro and nobody bought it, so we're just going to like focus on the Mac Studio instead. And everyone will go, well, we didn't buy it because it didn't give us any of the stuff that we wanted. And they're like, well, you didn't really need it, so you just get a Mac Studio. It's basically the same thing.
Well, there better be a story there, right? There better be a story. Like, Gurman said that they're going to add support for storage, and maybe there'll be some other kind of, like, extensions of it, and, you know, you'll be able to put it all inside and have a big... But it's a huge thing that might be mostly air, and, like, well, I mean, they can have great big fans and stuff, but if it's just...
Ah, the Mac Pro Air, Jason, you've nailed it.
But it's just, like, if it's only an Ultra, the Mac Studio can cool that, so the Mac Pro won't have a problem with it, but, like, if that's all there is, like, there has to be another part of the story here, because if it literally is just a gigantic Mac Studio you can put more internal hard drives in, that's not much of a thing. So
right. There
needs to be more to that story. But what Gurman's reports say is what it won't be is the quad chip variant of the M2. That's not what they're going to do. So what is it, right? What is it? Can you extend the GPUs? Is there going to be basically a GPU card that you can stick in it that is a whole bunch of presumably Apple GPUs, but you can just load that up? I don't know, right? Like, it's, and what is that? Maybe that's essentially another M2. You can literally add another M2 Max to it, but all it really does is add GPU. I don't know. It's It's very mysterious, and it does sound like it, there's a chance here that they're just going to introduce a really compromised product because they need to do something, and that would be very weird and disappointing. But, you know, the big question from the beginning of hearing about the Apple Silicon transition was, what do you do on the high end? Because they've gotten really good at making mobile processors. And they've done pretty good up to now, and they keep creeping up. But, like, it's starting to sound to me like, although they keep creeping up and they keep impressing people with performance, it sounds like the Mac Pro is where it, Apple's, like, material doesn't work. Right? Where Apple's...
Right.
Apple's strengths up to now don't quite extend or translate into that product. And I think it's going to be interesting if they do come out with that product, what they try to do to show that they've put in the effort. Because that's basically what it is, right? Is what are they going to add to Apple Silicon as a concept to reach higher? And we haven't, so far, the best we've seen is the M2 Ultra on the Mac Studio. That's it.
Right, right. Or separating things off like video encode engines, right? You know, things that are tuned to very specific tasks. And, you know, I think neural engine, that kind of stuff. I think that is where a lot of the interesting innovation lies, not in just making more faster cores, because that's fine, but it only takes you so far. Mm-hmm. But in looking at what are the specific applications that people need and how do we tune our hardware to do that very, you know, very, very well. So I, as I remarked to you, as I was doing the Mac Mini review, for me, the most enlightening part was using OBS, the streaming software, which I had spent a lot of time using on my previous iMac, and which was always terrible for a number of reasons. Mm-hmm. Part of which was they literally were using the wrong API to capture windows on the screen. And it was terrible, like terrible frame rates, just really bad. You can actually go back and watch some of those Total Party Kill videos where I did that. It's bad quality, and I apologize, but it was the best it could do.
Yeah.
And now it runs, it's native to Apple Silicon. They fixed that. And it ran like, you know, I was streaming like a gameplay, and it was like 5% of the CPU. Just bananas. That was such a difference from where I was. And you're sitting there going like, it's not just about the hardware, right? It's about the software taking advantage of the hardware. And that's what we've learned, is if you are running software that is programmed for Apple's own platforms, and we saw this with gaming too, right? Apple was touting the Resident Evil Village as, look how good, you know, gaming can be on the Mac. And the answer is absolutely. It can app. These machines are super capable. They have great graphics performance. They have great specs. They can absolutely do a great job of playing games if people build games for them. And that is where the problem falls down, because there is not enough of a market of developers who are using Apple's frameworks to build their games, because the market's not there. So it's a chicken and egg problem, right? Like, all those people who are diehard Mac gamers, they suffered it out for a long time, and then they moved to consoles, or they built PCs.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, well, there's no market there. And it's like, yeah, because you didn't really it was not nurtured when it needed to be. And part of that is not their fault, because Microsoft snapped up a lot of the high end and basically cornered the market there in like the 90s. But yeah, you didn't really fight back very hard. So that's where we are now.
No, and the truth is that the reason even that Apple's GPUs are so impressive on Apple Silicon is because they made impressive GPUs to do things they wanted to do, including games, but other stuff, on the iPhone, right? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, that's the truth of it, is that we're all using big iPhones now, right? Running Mac OS. But those are the choices they made, and there's lots of benefits to them. But, you know, iPhone games are fine, and you could play those on the Mac too, I guess, if you want. But like, the other games aren't there, and they've never really been there. And it's funny, because yes, these systems are really capable of that. But also, you know, if you're going to spend $2,000 to play games on a computer, you're not going to buy a MacBook Pro to do it, right? Like,
nope.
That's not, you would never do that.
You could get a much better gaming computer for less money.
Yeah. Right. Not in a better computer necessarily, but much better for playing games in terms of compatibility.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And heck, you buy a console, which is a quarter of that price and is designed specifically for that. You know, that it's the same thing. It's hardware that's tuned to a specific purpose, and that is what your PlayStation 5s and your Xbox Ones are. They're designed to, you know, play games, and that's it. You're not going to... They have web browsers, but you're not browsing the web on them. You're not checking your email. You're not doing Photoshop on your... on your PlayStation.
I don't think so. Probably not.
I mean, I would love to hear from you if you are, because that's fascinating and strange.
It is. It is. Yeah, this week's upgrade, next week's upgrade is going to be all Mike reading, because Mike made the mistake of asking for 16-inch MacBook Pro users to explain themselves. And they did, apparently. I'm just not even going to be involved in that. When he asked, I'm like, do you realize what you've done? He's like, no, I want to know. I'm like, okay, well.
They're going to tell you.
Your funeral.
I guarantee you they will tell you.
Anything else this week that, I don't know, security. I sat through a presentation with various people at Apple and otherwise about Apple's new security stuff because it's privacy stuff because it's privacy week, World Privacy Day week or something. They did a video, and they are adding a session. I think it's good. They're adding a session in their Apple retail stores about privacy settings, where they're going to actually be able to walk people through sort of like on their iPhones what their settings are and what. And I think that like that's a good example of Apple saying more than just like, hey, privacy, that's iPhone, but actually like come into our store and we will walk you through what your privacy settings are on your device and what that means. I think that's kind of cool. Obviously very self-serving, but because, you know, it's PR, but at the same time, it's also Apple trying to make something, you know, a little more tangible about their privacy features. And I think that's a good thing because it can be very confusing for people.
Yeah. I ran through, as long as we're talking about the security thing, I ran through the new hardware security feature, hardware security keys that Apple added as well in the updates this week. And so, you know, another place where Apple mentioned this last year before when they rolled out all their new security precautions like advanced data protection that we saw. But this allows you to secure your Apple ID with a hardware dongle. It is just another box in some ways for Apple to check about services that they offer, which I thought was, it's fine. I don't think most people are going to need this. I don't think most people are going to do this. But it's there, and it's smart of them to, again, you know, continue to add features tuned to this because it is their brand.
Yeah, it is.
I think that's kind of
new Macs is the big thing here. We got the new Macs and got to try them, and that was the big thing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks everybody out there for listening to the podcast. And indeed, at the end of this podcast, you will hear our hour from Monday afternoon of talk in detail about our new hardware. So enjoy that. And if you haven't seen the video already, and until next week, when who knows, maybe there'll be new Macs again. Probably not, though. Probably not. I swear we don't have any new Macs under embargo right now. I promise. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.
Hi, everybody. We're here. It's Dan, Center Stage Dan, and
oh no,
locked off camera position Jason here, live.
Smart.
To talk about new things, Dan. You and I both have spent since Wednesday, when the FedEx person arrived,
shows up with a box full of things.
Using
over your life,
using announced but not yet released Apple products. And so you had the Mac Mini, which is perfect because you are a person who's been waiting for the new Mac Mini to come out. And then look at that. You ended up getting a little package from Apple. And I got a large package from Apple, a gigantic laptop full of an M2 Max processor. So we've been spending the last 5 days with that. So this is a YouTube stream. If you're watching live on YouTube, that's where you are. Welcome to YouTube.com. What? And you can leave a comment if you've got a question. If you want to say something mean, I mean, don't. But if you have a question for us, you've got two people here who have been using the new products for all this time. And we could maybe answer them or at least try. Dan, what, before we get started with that, you have an overview, like big thoughts about the Mac Mini?
Yeah, it's interesting. As I said in my review, I feel like there's a couple different computers here, right? Because, I mean, so I tested the M2 Pro, which is the high end of the lineup. That comes itself in a couple different flavors. Apple sent me the best processor version, which has 12 cores of CPU, I believe, and 19 GPU cores. And then there is, of course, just the sort of standard vanilla M2 option as well, which is, you know, I think the biggest sort of news there is it costs $599 at the base level, which is $100 less than the old M1 Mac Mini cost. And I think it's kind of fascinating to see the disparity between, like, here's our low-cost computer, gets you in the door, and it's a really good computer, right? I mean, it's basically the same thing as in the M2 MacBook Air. And then at the high end, you have something that goes up closer towards like a Mac Studio. So the Mini continues to be an incredibly versatile product in Apple's lineup, and it does a great job of filling in all of the various like gaps that might exist. You know, you think like, oh, well, they've got an iMac, but I need something with a little more power. It's like, well, you've got the M2 Pro Mac Mini. It's like, oh, well, they've got the iMac, but it starts at, you know, whatever, $1,199, $1,299. I need something that's a little cheaper. Well, they've got the Mac Mini at $599. So it really does manage to do a good job of covering a lot of bases. And no matter which one you get, the impressive thing in the story of Apple Silicon continues to be the performance is great. The performance is great no matter which one you're using. And, oh, you know, the vanilla M2 will suffice for a lot of people's daily needs. And if you need that little bit extra power, the M2 Pro is pretty good. And there's, you know, more power beyond that, obviously, as you're going to talk about. But, like, you know, a lot of the basic and lower level configurations will really get the job done for the vast majority of consumers.
Yeah, I mean, I keep saying you know who you are if you need more than that. But, like, what I said on Upgrade earlier today is I have friends of mine who say, oh, my kid needs a new laptop or I need a new laptop. And they are worried that like the low end Apple laptop isn't going to be able to do it. And mm-hmm. I just end up saying to them, oh, no, it can do anything. Literally anything you try, it will do, because I know who you are and I know what you're going to attempt. And you're not going to try to render an enormous 3D object in a piece of software that costs a lot of money. That professionals use, right? And so therefore, like, it's not even a question. It's not going to be a problem. You're going
to
be fine.
It didn't used to be the way, too, right? Not. I think that's the thing that people struggle with, is, like, this did not used to be the state of affairs in computing. And the Apple Silicon transition has really made it that, like, it doesn't really matter what level you start at. Like, we start at meeting and probably exceeding your needs, and we only go up from there.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. Do you think it's fair? I've been telling people that it's essentially two computers, right? There's the M2 and
absolutely.
The M2 Pro. And like the M2, yeah, it is very powerful, really, for regular use. And then the M2 Pro, it's nice that we have that thing that you've been writing about for the last year and a half, which is like, where's that slot between, I mean, really, since the Mac Studio came out,
yeah,
especially
exactly.
between that M1 Max, which is kind of overkill for most people, and but a little more capability, not just processor speed, but video out and some other stuff in the base model
the RAM,
M
yeah,
chip.
All that stuff.
Right?
And yeah, so no, I think that's computers. Great. Yeah, no, it's two computers, absolutely. I actually wish they'd done a better job of marketing it that way. They do put in that weird middle ground configuration that is $200 more and just has more storage.
Yeah.
And I find that perplexing, because even with the good, better, best thing, which I know they like to do, the MacBook Air and the Mac Studio
don't
they
have
do
it.
Two.
Right.
It's only two. And you're like, why did you put that there? It's
some,
a silly
somebody in marketing won the argument this time. They wore them down and they tired them out.
There you go.
I had the MacBook Pro here, and I'm going to do one of those things since I'm directing this. I'm going to switch to the overhead shot because, you know, I paid for a reclaimed wood desk, and I'm going to use it for videos. So
reclaim some wood, Jason.
I did. So here we have, I got the 16-inch MacBook Pro. Dan doesn't get to see this, or he gets to see it very delayed on the YouTube stream. I just want to call your attention to the color match. Oh, I can actually switch to my other view, my exciting... desk view here.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks, continuity camera. Just to show you the color match on the MagSafe port, just because some people care about that. It was a little silly that you got a silver one no matter what right. MacBook Pro you bought on the M1 models. On the M2, they're doing what they did with the MacBook Air, which is actually color matched to the color of the laptop. So this is space gray. It's got a space gray thing.
And then if I go back to my overhead shot here too, it's huge. I mean, I know if you love a 16-inch laptop, well, guess what? This is one of those. It's gigantic. I don't understand it because I am a MacBook Air kind of person, but it's big and the battery's enormous. And you know, I think like one of the reasons you get this, to go back to these side views, is the ports, right? I mean, you've got your two Thunderbolt 4 on this side along with MagSafe and the headphone jack, and on the other side, flip it around, you got your SD card slot, you got another Thunderbolt, and you got the HDMI 2.1, which has even more video out than you've ever been able to see on a Mac before. So a lot of video out power there. And of course, if you're one of those people who runs in lid closed at your desk, you need a MacBook Pro because the MacBook Air will not drive more than one. So if you're a multi-monitor person, you're going to want a MacBook Pro anyway. And yes, on my desk here, just while we're at it, the large power adapter that comes with it, because it's got a big battery to charge. And then here's my color matched MagSafe cable. And yes, there's my continuity camera right there. So
it's a weird concession to color there, given that I mean, the all of these products are available in only a couple options now, right? I mean, so the MacBook Pro only available in what, silver, and is it still space gray?
Yeah, still space gray.
Space gray still exists.
Still does.
Haven't gotten rid of that.
Nope.
And the Mac Mini available only in silver. The space gray option, which was previously the Intel version, no longer exists. So it's space. It's a silver or nothing.
Here's my overhead.
Bummer.
Just as a contrast, I'm going to put my MacBook Air on top of the 16-inch. Just to, if you wonder how much bigger it is, it's a lot bigger. And then also, that's the difference between space gray and midnight. If you were wondering, midnight is extremely, extremely dark compared to space gray. And that's the story there. My little tiny MacBook Air. Oh, there we go. So, Dan.
Yes.
Lots of Mac Mini stuff, lots of MacBook Pro stuff. Let's jump into it. Ryan said the Mac Mini is underrated on its portability. I commute to work 30 minutes every day with a Mac Mini in my backpack. Look at that.
That's awesome. I mean, yeah, it's not a big machine. It fits in a bag. I mean, I just wouldn't want to deal with unplugging it and shutting it down and all that jazz, but like, I don't know. It's fine.
If you're not working on your vehicle of transit mode, whatever it might be, if you're not working on that, because that would be hard. But
I was literally telling this story the other day where I was in a coffee shop back when I used to do most of my work in coffee shops, where I saw somebody bring a flat screen white iMac in. It's like, if people are doing that, you can probably bring a Mac Mini. It's
sure,
fine.
Why not? Eddie says he just ordered the 14-inch M2 Pro, hoping this will finally be my one machine. What do you guys think? I mean, I've heard from a lot of people who are using the MacBook Pro as their only docking at the desk. I docked a MacBook Air at my desk for years, and it was actually, that was back in the era where lid-closed Mac laptops were really actually kind of unreliable. I can't tell you how many times I got home and pulled my MacBook Air out, and it was hot because it was in some sort of like not quite a sleep mode after I unplugged it from my display. But Apple's gotten a lot better with that software over the years. And the power is immense. I think your one machine could be a MacBook Air. It's certainly a MacBook Pro is going to take care of it.
I was a MacBook Air only person for several years until I got an iMac. So, yeah, no question. I mean, that was an Intel 11-inch MacBook Air, and it was my only computer for several years. So, no question, a MacBook Pro will do just fine for you.
Simon asks, any reason for someone looking at getting a Mac Mini should still look at an M1?
I honestly don't think so. I mean, the M2 is cheaper. You can probably find an M1 Mac Mini at a discount. You could probably get it cheaper. I don't think it's going to be so much cheaper that the, you know, performance difference isn't worth it. I got to be honest. I mean, if you just want to get a base level, I mean, I guess if you want to get a spec'd up M1, and worry about that over an M2. But the M1 Mac Mini didn't even offer that much in terms of additional options. Like, you can get more storage or more RAM, I guess, but it's still maxed out at 16 gigabytes. So unless you are on the strictest of budgets, I guess I would say probably not.
Yeah, unless you can get a really good deal, right? Or I was envisioning,
I mean, we're talking
like
$200 or $300, right?
Like, yeah, well, I was thinking nicely spec'd or $599 with way better specs than the $599 M2 Mini, maybe, right? Like $599, but more RAM and more. yeah. storage.
Maybe, maybe. But again, I think in most cases that $599 Mac, M2 Mac Mini is really the kind of a sweet spot.
Yeah. So, okay, here's one from Helena Symphony. I have the MacBook Air M2, and when rendering a 4K project out of Final Cut Pro, is it still 10? I don't know anymore. The Air takes less time with the same project files off the same drives. Less time than what? I don't know. So the MacBook Pro M2s are how amazing. There's some weird stuff going on here. The M2 and M2 Pro have, I think, the same decoding and encoding blocks, and the M2 Max has double, has two of them instead of one. And in the Final Cut results that we published, that I think is why the M2 Mac Mini that Dan had, which has the Pro, and the other M2 like the Air had similar Final Cut export scores, and the Studio and my 16-inch MacBook Pro with the Max chip and the Studio with the Max chip were twice as fast. I think it comes down to the fact that there are two of those encoding blocks that are dedicated hardware inside the Max chip, and there's only one inside the Pro chip, and there's only one inside in M2, there's one inside the M2 chip that wasn't there for the M1.
Right, because that was a change Apple made when they went to the M2, was they borrowed something that had been in the M1 Pro and up and moved it down to the M2, but now the M2 and the M2 Pro perform pretty similarly in that regard.
Yeah, exactly right. Josh says, why is the cable white? I'm sorry. It's, I mean, I love the detail orientation here. This cable actually isn't white. It is gray, and it is basically color matched. And if I reach over here and pull out my MacBook Air cable, it is midnight. So they are color matched pretty well. Of course, the tip of it and the block is white, but the actual wrap is a color, pretty good color match. Also, I think Kevin Ham is the Helena Symphony. Just not the whole symphony didn't write in. Although we love to be supported by the arts.
I appreciate. We are fans of the arts, and if Symphony has questions for us, we have answers for the Symphony.
All right, Verge review of the MacBook Pro says one of their tests caused the fans to blast and the keyboard got hot. Did you experience any situation during your testing where it got hot and or loud? Hot. Okay. When the GPUs run, in fact, maybe I should actually run a GPU test here. Let's see.
Live on the air. We're doing it live.
I mean, we could do it live. I was going to run a GPU test and we were going to see, if I can get it to yell at me. So the Verge review, When you push the GPU is when the fans go off. When you push the CPU, I had the CPU cores running at 100% every single core, and it killed the battery in 2.5 hours. But the fans were never audible. I mean, I'm sure they were running, but they were never audible to me, and my hearing's pretty good. It is when the GPU kicks in that it really throws off a lot of heat. The fans have to go. I would say when the CPU tests were going on, you know, you could tell almost immediately that the underside of the laptop got warm, but it never really felt hot. It was never really uncomfortable. And the keyboard didn't feel hot. So I don't know about that, but I will say that when the GPU tests are running, like this one is now, after a little bit, the fans started blowing. So this is GFX Bench, and we'll just let it run and see what happens. But anyway, that's my answer. About that, it's just
I didn't on the Mac Mini side, I never noticed the fans coming on, and I don't know if that's a combination of the fans being extremely quiet or the overall cooling sort of profile of the Mini being superior, right? Unlike the laptop, you don't have to pack everything into such a tight space. There's more open air potentially and more airflow in the Mini, so I think that helps a lot. Certainly not, as Jason said, with anything, you know, putting the CPUs to maximum. I put my watch up, my Apple Watch with the decibel meter up there. I did not notice any major change. I never heard anything. I was like sticking my ear up against it. I couldn't hear anything going. So
it's a great sign for all those people who are upset about the Mac Studio having its fan on all the time, right?
To me, it seems whisper quiet. I honestly can't even hear that it's running. I keep thinking I'm hearing noise, and then I realize it's my Synology down in like the corner. It's like, nope, that's the Synology, yeah. Not the Mini.
And I'm a little skeptical of people saying sort of like, oh, well, the M1 was absolutely silent and the M2 is noisier. I don't know what those experiences were. My experience is that if you kill the GPU on either of them, it will crank up the fans. That's just what it will do. The GPU is where all your heat really gets generated. That's where the thermal envelope really comes into play, much more than it is the CPUs, like by a lot. And if you've got 30 GPUs, by a lot, right? That's when it's going to start to scream. Joey wants to know, is that base unit's 8 gigs of RAM viable? It feels like 2 tabs of Chrome could eat that with no problem.
There are a lot of RAM questions in the comments and a lot of RAM discussion, as I'm not surprised. And, you know, we've talked about this before, but it is kind of, again, another place where the conventional wisdom, I think, is challenged a little bit by the way Apple has chosen to do things here. This unified memory architecture, which debuted with the M1, is different in the way that it works. It's not to say that more RAM doesn't allow you to do more stuff. That's certainly the case. But eight gigabytes of RAM on the, you know, M2 is not entirely an apples to apples comparison with 8 gigabytes of RAM on an old Intel MacBook. It's just not the same beast. And it's hard to explain exactly why that's the case, other than just the stuff's on the chip, basically, right? It's got a much bigger memory pipeline. It's much easier to access and share amongst everything. So 8 gigabytes is very capable for a Apple Silicon.
Did you say gigabytes?
Gigabytes. Hold on to your gigabytes, Jason.
Okay. I'm holding them.
Hold on.
I'm holding them. Lee also said, would you recommend doing 16 gigs of RAM or stick with 8 and upgrade the storage to 512?
That's a dilemma,
right?
I mean, here's my feeling. I feel like you can never get more RAM, right? Like, that's the problem. Whatever RAM you buy with this computer is the RAM you will have. If you have the money, and that's what it comes down to, because Apple still charges a good amount if you want to, you know, upgrade the RAM. But if you can afford to upgrade the RAM, you always buy as much RAM as you can afford. That's generally the way it works. And, you know, you won't. No one's ever sad that they have too much RAM. No one's like, well, you know, well, probably would. I mean,
and even
but storage you can add on, yeah, right? That's the
I mean,
thing.
You can
storage
get by. You can get by with 8, but storage you can add on. I mean, if you're on a laptop, you can't add on internally. Although even there, you could probably stick in an SD card, and even though it's slow, you could offload some stuff. But certainly, sure, you can get a really nice external SSD and offload stuff. It's not as nice as having more that you don't have to offload, but you can do it. Whereas with the RAM, once it's built, it's like that forever. So that's why what tips me toward RAM. I've done 8. 8's okay. 16 is nicer. And what is it? 256 is the base?
Yeah. I find that a little low.
It's
but
painful.
You might get by.
It's painful.
My Mac Mini
server, which is an Intel Mac Mini server, has 128.
Oh, that's too small.
It's terrible.
It's fine for an iPhone, I think, but not a, yeah.
Yeah.
I just learned recently our friend Glenn Fleischman boots off an external SSD on his computer, which sounds like madness. But I will say the Mac Mini M2 Pro model that Apple sent me has 16 gigs. I did not notice any issues with the stuff that I'm doing. I ran some Logic stuff. I played some games, whatever. 16 gigabytes did not seem to be running into any thresholds. Possible 8 gigs might have seen just some more slowdowns, but I don't really know how to judge that. So yeah, always prioritize RAM, storage if you can afford it after that, but yeah.
Brick Window says, sorry if I missed it. Is there consensus on the value of a base Mac Studio versus M2 Mini with some spec bumps?
Well, this is a big conversation, and I know, Jason, you were talking on Upgrade just earlier today about some of this, and I think there's some truth to what you said, which is as you spec stuff up, you're specking up both machines, therefore it's kind of like there's always a little bit of increase. But I think there is a point like where there's a little bit more, the decision gets harder in terms of like, because the M2 Pro, for example, is like you spec up some of it to match where the M1 Max is already in terms of things like cores, right? Like, so the better M2 Pro chip has more performance cores, which is more on par with the M1 Max. It has a few more GPUs, so you get closer to the M1 Max. You still will be lower in other places, right? Like the RAM, I think, is lower in the base M1 Max than you can upgrade in the M2 Pro. So there is a point there where it gets a little bit like, you know, around $2,000, can you spec out something that's roughly close in the M1 Mac Studio versus the M2 Pro Mac Mini? Yeah, but there's still trade-offs, right? Like, if you need really more stuff with it that's like graphics heavy, I think the Studio does still outpace it a bit. But if you're not doing that, the answer is you can probably get by with the M2 Pro Mac Mini, and you can probably still save a little money. Like, as we were discussing before, like, where do you make those cuts? What things do you decide to upgrade? So I think, you know, myself, I ran into that same issue looking at the prices and thinking, well, you know, you start getting into intro entry level Mac Studio territory, but you're still making trade-offs, right? It's not, I think, clean cut necessarily.
Yeah, the Studio is going to cost you several hundred dollars more, I think, if you really try to keep the RAM and storage equal. And like you said, Dan, you know, so much of what's in the Studio is it does have that extra video encode, which is nice if you're doing a lot of video. And it's got the GPUs, right? And so if you're doing GPU stuff, but so many things that a lot of people do, even high-end users, are not killing the GPUs. They're just right. Not. They're CPU bound. Or they're disk bound.
I will tell you,
or they're
the
memory
one
bound.
Thing that would have made this just much more like easy for me to say M2 Pro Mac Mini all the time is ports on the front. That's the one thing the Studio still brings. And it's a stupid little thing that I feel like, Apple, come on, you were willing to concede that some people like ports on the front. I just set up today the Apple ID security key thing, and I'm like, where you put in your like USB-C security key when you're logging into your Apple ID. I'm like, I have to reach behind my monitor to plug a thing in. And if it's something you're taking in and out all the time, like a flash drive, I don't have to go behind my Mac Mini. Come on.
Okay, just behind the scenes, because this happened to me today, because I'm trying to show you that I absolutely agree to you. The overhead shot that I've got here is coming from a camera mounted up there. And then where does the cable go? Well, I wanted to plug it in. I could have plugged it into the Studio display, I guess. But what did I actually do? Oh, it's plugged into the front of my Mac Studio, because I was like, oh, my ports are taken up. And I thought, no. I have two more ports.
Yeah.
That's it.
That would have killed you, Apple, to put some ports on the front.
I kind of agree. But then again, maybe that's their differentiator there. I think, though, I mean, coming back to the two, it's two different Macs, is the Pro, you can save some money if you don't need the ports and the extra video encode block and all those GPUs.
Yeah.
You can, and I feel like even though people are going to be tempted by the Mac Studio, I feel like it's a pretty clear break there, where the good news is you can save yourself some money and not have to buy a $2,000 Mac Studio.
Sure.
And that's good. Like that, I think that's really good. Or if you're somebody who's like, yeah, and it has to be terabyte internal. Well, I mean, the price numbers change, but the difference doesn't change. Then you're talking about a whatever $2,500 Mac Studio and a $2,200 Mac Mini. You're still going to save money. I called it a Mac Mooney there. So butts.
It's got 3.4 gigabytes in your Mac Mooney.
In your Mac Mooney, it's live, people. It's live. Let's see, a lot of 8 gig RAM things which people are asking about. And I agree with you, and there's like Jacob has the statement in here, which is it's fine for almost all daily work, unless it's RAM intensive, which of course, but like, I agree. I feel like having more RAM feels nicer and safer, but even in 8, it's usable. It is, especially given how fast the SSD is. And like, even if you're paging,
am I going to get 32 gigabytes in my M2 Pro Mac Mini? Probably. Because why not?
Oh, well, I mean, if you're made of money.
I guess. I don't know. I just like having lots of RAM. What can I say?
Yeah. Do you feel that 256 is too little as the baseline? Are they cheaping out there?
I do think 256. I mean, it's right at the edge. I've traditionally bought less storage on almost all my devices. Like, I went down to the 128 gigabyte iPhone when I could, when they started making that available in the Pro. I had a 512 gigabyte iMac. A terabyte's nice, but I've gotten to the point where I don't like as much having everything on my device. I like having stuff network accessible so I can get at it from my desktop, my laptop, my iPhone, my iPad, all of that. So I've relied a lot more on cloud storage, whether it be Dropbox or iCloud, and I've also relied a lot more on offloading stuff archivally to my network attached storage device, because I just don't need to have all of those files at my fingertips all the time. So for me especially, the big chunks are the like podcast files that I spend a lot of time in. And Jason and I have talked about this, but like, you don't need to keep them all there, right? Like, I probably don't need to keep them all, but that the pack rat side. But then you can like compress them up, throw them up on a server, and if you need them, they're there, but they don't need to take up the space on your main drive.
Right.
So unless you really are committed to having everything on your main drive, I think you can get by with less, but I do think 256 is like, it's just right at the edge. You know, it's the, if you keep everything in the cloud, and now I'm trying to remember, actually, I've got my MacBook Air here in front of me, which I think actually only has, I think it has less than that. I think it has 256 potentially. But I need to find
I think,
it.
I think my Air is 256.
Yeah, it's got 256. Like, I can get by with 256 on a laptop. Like, I try to keep nothing on there, basically. But yeah, it's definitely trickier.
I might even phrase it this way, which is, you could do 8 gigs in 256. You could do the base model. Yeah. I like the base model Air. Same thing, right? You could do it. You may suffer from time to time, but mostly not. And at least from the storage standpoint, yeah, you can offload it to a server in your house. Or an external hard drive, and have some strategies there. I laughed at Jeremiah Jordan's comment, which is, I keep my Mac Mini facing backward. That solves the port problem for sure. Very nice.
That's one way to do it. It's one way to do it. I mean, if you don't like, you know, you care about having your desk all nice and clean and everything, which I can never get because I still end up with cords running over my desk. Yeah. But yeah, it does make more. You don't need to look at the front.
Do what I did.
The front tell you? It tells you the machine is on.
Stick the computer under your desk, and then there are fewer cords.
Indeed.
Joshua says, "Do you think somewhere down the line Apple will reduce the cost of upgrades? Some of these prices are ridiculous. I know it's wishful thinking. I mean, to a certain extent, it is wishful thinking. But I also think that what happens is the upgrades change and." You know, I as Apple Silicon goes on, I don't know. I feel like some of these differentiators won't be as big a price difference as they are now. But I don't know. This is Apple's. I mean, they're not wrong on one level, right? These are deeply integrated. The storage and especially the RAM, it's in the package, right? At the same time, it also means there's no competition and Apple gets to charge what they want. I think that Mac users ought to get used to the idea that your instead of buying a computer and then thinking I'll spend money on it over time in order to update it, that's been fading away. And I would say it's now officially like just gone. You're all in. You get a new Mac, you're all in. You buy it as it's going to be for its entire life. And then you use it until you're ready to move on. And I think that we're going to all have to just sort of get used to that. And that the upsells are going to be high prices.
Yeah. And in some ways, I think you know, the computers were kind of an aberration in that regard. There's most of the other stuff that you buy in your life, you don't spend time souping up, right? Your TV, it's the same TV as when you bought it, right? You probably didn't add anything to your TV.
Yeah.
Even your car, right? Like, you know, it's...
There's some people who upgrade their cars.
There's always some people.
But I think mostly it was a fallacy of upgrades. Like, I want to make it available. Exactly. And then it became less and less realistic. And now it's just not possible.
It's just more packaged, right? Everything is more packaged. It's more of an appliance.
Yes. And we benefit, right? Like, the system in the package, we benefit with the shared pool of RAM and the speed that is attached that close. But the downside is it is what it is. And it can't be more at this point.
Yep. Yep.
Greg has a good one here. Not that long ago, it felt like there were gotchas in Apple's lineup. It feels like Apple Silicon era has really changed things where most products are good enough. Are there any gotchas left?
Like, are we talking about products and how they're positioned, basically? I can think of two off the top of my head. I already referenced the 79.
Well, the Mac Pro is a gotcha. It's Intel. No. Don't get it. Don't buy it.
That $799 Mac Mini configuration I already mentioned, it's not really a gotcha, but it's silly. I would say the 13-inch MacBook Pro is still in the lineup, right? The one with the touch bar. Is that still at the bottom end there?
Yeah.
I don't think you should buy that. That feels like a gotcha. It's just there to hold down a price point.
And to sell to corporate buyers who insist on buying a MacBook Pro.
Need a MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
But it's old technology. The touch bar is not being updated. I would kill it. The only other thing in there is maybe the M1 Air, but the M1 Air is still a great laptop. Very faintly.
The fan is going now, so just very exciting, everybody out there. I did it.
You got the fan running.
I ran the GPU all this time, and it's only in the last little bit
it's like 20 minutes.
The fan has come on, and it's been a while. So there you go. You can do it. And it is not quiet, but it took a lot of work in, and it was heavy GPU work for that to actually happen.
But yeah, that $999 MacBook M1 Air, again, you know, it makes sense for the holding down the sub $1,000. Like, Apple should really get the M2 Air to that point because it feels like where you want to be. But I don't know. I would go so far as calling it a gotcha. I just think it's a very strategic product.
Yeah, I don't know if there are any other gotchas. That 13-inch MacBook Pro is a good example of that. I don't know. The Apple Silicon lineup is pretty strong. It's pretty strong. Even like the M1 iMac, I know the M1 has been out a while now, but M1 and the 999 MacBook Pro, I mean, or MacBook Air, we can roll our eyes at the fact that they have kept it around, exactly. But like,
it's a great price, right?
It's a great computer. I wish the M2 was 999, but it's not. And the M1 is still a great computer and it's 999. It's actually a great deal. Mm-hmm. Even today, even in 2023, that's a good computer. And so is the M1 iMac.
This is my M1 Air right here. It's still working fine. Mm-hmm. As sad as it makes me, because I love the M2 Air. It looks great, but I can't justify it.
Still getting it done. Do we know how fast the SSD is in the base M2 Mini?
I don't think any reviewer, as far as I'm aware, got a base M2 Mini. So I don't think we know for certain. This was an issue with the base M2 MacBook Air, I believe, right? It was a slower SSD in there, I think.
Because they only had one bank. Yeah,
so I don't think we know for
strangely,
sure.
They gave us all the higher-end configurations to review.
Weird. So I would wait, you know, if you're in the market, wait a couple weeks just for the benchmarks to come in. Somebody will figure it out when they get one. Somebody will post it online. There will be a story somewhere about how it does or does not have that. So if it's a concern, wait it out a couple more days.
I'm looking at the comments here. See if we got anything more.
Somebody asked if there's an SD slot on the Mini. There is not. Nope. So if you need that, not the place
attach
for it.
Attach a card reader to
attach
your
a card
monitor.
Reader. That's what you're doing. Yep.
Probably. Or to the back of your Mac Mini.
I have never had... I don't think I've... Oh, no. My old... I'm looking over at the... My old 2017 iMac is over in the corner. It does have a card slot. Never used it. I've literally never used a card slot on any Mac I have. I don't have anything that takes cards.
I have with my audio recorder has an SD card, and I have a couple of cameras that have SD cards. And so it's not high on my list of things, but I've used the SD slot on my Mac Studio when we were doing in lockdown, when my wife was doing YouTube videos of her library story times. Mm. They recorded, we're a very professional operation here, so she was recorded on a lav mic with my Zoom recorder. And so then I would have to pull the audio off of that and hand it to the editor, who was one of my children. And then they put the final files together. So I have definitely put that SD card slot to work, but you can get an adapter. It's not great, but you can do it.
Yeah.
Still looking here, see if there are other questions.
Somebody pointed out the 7-core, no Ethernet, 2 fewer ports iMac is a potential, I think, gotcha. It's not the best configuration. I agree that really
the low-end iMac.
Yeah, it's not great. But and again, it serves to hit a price point, I think, more than anything. But it's, you know, for a certain class of user, it will be fine. It's just not a thing that I think most people who care about their computers would probably want.
And I think there's a lot of support for the idea that the 256 storage option probably is just the one bank instead of the two, and so it'll be half the speed. That's probably true.
Maybe that is why they have that $799 Mac Mini configuration there for you.
And Lee made a nice comment about the M1 Air, saying one of the best deals out there, especially compared to an iPad Pro. Ouch, burn. Mine does everything I've thrown at it, including Logic Pro. It's true. Like, I was saying... this might have been on Upgrade too. That most of the work that most of us do, even if we do some heavy media work, is perfectly well done on an M1 or an M2 Air, even, or a Mac Mini. And the worst of it, for me at least, it would just take longer, right? Like a render, or a bounce, or some audio effect plugin. Might take more time, like my de-reverb thing that I do, like, it took 30 minutes instead of 10 minutes. Well, I mean, that's 20 minutes that I had to wait to get that file.
Sure.
That's true, but it still did it, right? And that's It's different than the demos that Apple gives where you're loading that 3D scene of a spaceship and they point out that it's the size of it. It won't even fit into RAM on a PC laptop.
Right.
It's like, okay, yeah, that's fair, but that is way.
It's way at the edge there. Yeah.
At the high end for me.
Prior to having this mini on my desk, I've been using an M1 Air as my only computer for the last 6 months or so. So it has handled everything that I've thrown at it. I have not run into a single case where it could not do what I want to. Like I said, sometimes it's slower than you'd like, but it's not, first of all, it's not slow by any definition, and it's just a matter of more time.
Do you have the Mac Mini there? Yes,
I do.
You should show it off, even though it exactly like a Mac Mini.
Oh, yes. Have you ever seen a Mac Mini? Mm. Then allow me to show to you a Mac Mini M2. Here it is.
Oh. What? It looks totally different.
Yeah. It's hooked up to, as you can see, a studio display, which is on an ARM. I think I'm using every single port back there that I could possibly be using.
Are you speaking to me on your from that Mac
Mini?
Yes,
this is what I am on right now.
Ooh,
very moment.
It's shooting itself, Wow.
I had that moment of like, you know, this is the one thing that will probably convince me for the M2 Pro really is like, again, there's four USB-C/Thunderbolt ports here. I think I'm using almost all of them. I think I unplugged just one recently to move it to the monitor, but I got my Ethernet, and I'm even using the USB-A ports because I've got stuff that needs USB-A.
Yeah,
which
sure.
is another big plus there. But yeah, it is a Mac Mini. If you've seen one, you've kind of seen them all.
Yeah, that's true. At least since they had the really tall one.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago now.
Kieran
Healy with a very focused comment that he uses his card reader to update boot images for his SE30 and Quadra 700. It's true. A lot of retro computing relies on the SD card thing. I think it's right over this shoulder. My little floppy emu here is the same deal. It's an SD card. And my Raspberry Pi, an SD card. I do all that stuff using the SD. Look. The SD card readers are everywhere.
It's fine. It's fine. Nothing just against not them. I just haven't used them.
Yeah, no need.
Not that come up.
That's fair enough. Tech Floyd says M1 Air refurb, best option ever. It's a pretty good deal. Refurbs.
I love shopping refurbs.
For everybody, everybody out there who's like, oh no, refurb, I'm scared. Take it from us, I got to do the geography right. People who do this for a living, I buy refurbs. Absolutely. Yeah, they're
a great
good.
Way to save
they're,
money.
They've gone through the Apple process. Apple is standing by them. They're warrantied. They are a lot of times it's literally somebody takes it and then brings it back a week later and says, I actually don't want this. And it's an open box and it's used. And so they refresh it, rewrap it up and send it to you. It's a great deal.
The only challenge you'll find is what's available is just very hit or miss, right? Like if you're looking for a specific configuration, you know, that's kind of tricky. But if you're looking for just like, I need something, like it's a great option. So I've recommended it for lots of people.
Here's one. Joe says, I have an M1 Max MacBook Pro connected to Studio Display and RAID for photos. Thinking about a decked out M2 Pro Mini as a standing desktop setup. Should I just wait for the new M2 Studios? Joe, we don't know if the M2 Studio will ever exist. There are actually no reports that it will exist, which I, as a person who's got a Mac Studio, I'm sort of sad about. This would be my second consecutive desktop Mac that is a one and done after my iMac Pro. I mean, your MacBook Pro is doing the job. I would look at the... Yeah, I mean, I think the M2 Pro Mini is worth thinking about because that's going to get you maybe not the same performance, but similar performance as your MacBook Pro, and it'll be a standalone desktop, and it's got lots of nice ports. And I would not count on the M2 version of the studio existing.
Nothing. I mean,
zero.
You know, you and I keep our ears to the ground to this kind of thing, and I have not heard so much as a whisper. And the M1 studio was like... There were reports about it out there. Nobody knew exactly what it was, but there were things floating around that suggested that product might exist or some product that fit there. I've heard absolutely nothing about an M2 Studio.
Just as most strenuous applications, Lightroom Classic. An M2 Pro is going to do you just as well as an M1 Studio, and I don't think the M2 Studio is going to throw it over the top for you. I think you could use a Mac Mini just fine. Floyd liked the back of the Mac Mini. Nice.
There you go.
It's like, nice. I mean, in some ways, the Mac Mini has always been this delightful space. The back of the Mac Mini has been a space where Apple is like, all right.
Go wild.
Ports.
Yeah. I mean, the Mac Mini is a weird computer. As I wrote in my review, it's a weird computer for Apple, right? Like when it first came out, it was a concession in some ways for Apple to say, like, all right, we're going to offer something that's a little cheaper. It doesn't come with all the peripherals that you need, right? It's to lure in PC users and all that. And who would have thought, you know, 18 years later, it's still just a critical part of the lineup. And it's still there, despite one of those, like, a computer that only sometimes gets updated every like 4 years or something like that. It's still a staple of the lineup. So I'm glad that the Mini continues to exist.
Yeah. You said it's the,
it's the mortar.
The mortar.
Yeah.
The other computers might be the bricks, but it's the mortar. And I always talked about it as a release pressure release valve that like, we have a variety of Macs available to do almost anything you want. And if you don't find one you like, here's the Mac Mini. Just go make it happen.
Put it whatever you want. Rack mounted in a server. Fit it in your car. Hook it up to your TV.
Put it in your closet.
You want to do.
Whatever you want. Server. I mean, I have literally had a Mac Mini as a server since the first Mac Mini. And I've gone through, what, 3 or 4 of them now?
I think I had 2 or 3 on my hooked up to my TV for a long time.
Yeah. Mine currently is the 2018, so last gen Intel version. Mm. And it's pretty nice. And I'm probably going to stick with it for a while longer, but I have to say the siren song of the M2 is calling. If for nothing else, then I know that how much less power it's going to use.
Efficiency, no small thing.
That Intel one, and I mean it's also that Intel one's running on Mojave. But what if I do need to run a 32-bit app? I don't need to, but and yet it is. I have not updated it from Mojave. I think
what
it's
if
the
you
reason.
Need to run a 3 gigabyte app.
I think gigabyte. It might be the reason that computer might be the reason that all my iCloud sharing is wrong, because it might be like, oh, I can't update your real time iCloud sharing because you've got this Mojave Mac on your Apple ID.
You need less Javi.
Jesse says Apple pricing. Think about it, double it, and then add 20%. I'll just say, Jesse, you left out the part where you round up. Always
round up.
Round up generously. Let's see.
Somebody asked about the 27-inch M2 Pro Plus iMac XDR. I think, well, there's a couple questions in there. Will there be a 27-inch iMac? Again,
feeling like
doesn't
not.
Seem like it.
Apple went to great lengths in describing the Mac Mini to talk about, like, comparing it to the 27-inch iMac. And I think that Apple would tell you at this point, now they could. Also, there are no reports that although they have thought about doing it, that it's sort of like next year at the earliest. Yep. And I think Apple would tell you, get a studio display and a Mac Mini. And that's our solution for people who want that big 27-inch display.
Which is, you know, as a happy 27-inch iMac owner, I'm a little sad about, but I also have moved on. I think what will be interesting when this M3 iMac, in theory, shows up this fall, if the rumors pan out, is whether or not the iMac will get a Pro configure option as the Mac Mini did. I would bet on yes, but I bet on yes last time and it didn't happen. There was never an M1 Pro iMac. Who knows?
I agree with you though. I think that it would be absolutely logical for them to introduce, it might even be an M3 before it comes out.
Yeah.
And have the iMac available with either the M3 or the M3 Pro.
Yeah,
but still just the 24-inch display.
Oh, yeah. I don't think the display will go up. I think Apple's very happy to have that. I mean, they've already got how many SKUs because of all the colors. I don't think they want to throw necessarily another. And I assume they have numbers that say most people didn't buy the 27-inch or it just didn't sell as well.
Probably right. And this being more modular, it lets people pick and choose whether you want a base model Mac Mini or that hot. Again, any of those four, the two Mac Minis or the Mac Studios, it gives you some options there. I also wonder if that might be, instead of it being, you know, they've got that really low-end M1 iMac that we talked about with the fewer ports.
Right,
I wonder if instead the way they do it is just say, look, you can get an M3 or an M3 Pro, and that's really how they differentiate, very much like the Mac Mini. You could even say, imagine that this Mac Mini is released as an iMac. That might be what it looks like.
I think it will be pricier, though, because of all the stuff. So you're looking, you're looking at $2,000 to $2,500.
You gotta get the screen.
And
the keyboard and the mouse, which brings us to Agent Monroe, who said, what did Jobs say when it was introduced? Bring your own display, keyboard, and mouse.
I am sad, as I think I said elsewhere, that the there's no I am using Apple also sent me a keyboard and a trackpad, so they gave me the extended keyboard, which is too big for me, and I am sad that they did not revamp the keyboards with the USB-C or the Magic Trackpad or the Magic Mouse. I assume that's coming probably with the next iMac. I also am very amused because they just for fun they sent me a black Magic Trackpad.
Oh yeah.
Which I have my keyboard tray is black, and so actually I'll show this because this is kind of funny. If I can switch to my camera view here for 1 second, every time I go out of my peripheral vision, I keep looking for it and I lose it.
It's gone.
And so I'm like, I'll like look over like, where is my trackpad? Oh, there it is. Okay.
It's right there.
It was very confusing for me for a while, especially because the keyboard is wide enough that everything moved over. So my hands have been in the wrong place. Mm-hmm. It's terrible. It really drives me nuts. But we'll move back eventually.
It's tragic. Let's see. Other comments here.
There's one from Josh Muthamani down there, too, about MKBHD made a bet while reviewing the M1 MacBook Pro that he would wear socks and sandals like Linus if Apple didn't add Face ID in the next update because of the notch. Either of you plan on any such challenges?
What would be the, make a bet about? I wouldn't make a bet on Face ID.
No. I'm surprised, but I definitely wouldn't bet on it. Apple's... If they have had a lot of chances to do it and they haven't done it, which tells me that if they really wanted to do it, it would have gotten done.
They've done their solution is that they've got Touch ID on the laptops and they've got the Touch ID keyboard now.
Yeah,
and they may feel like that's just good enough for them. I could see them maybe doing it on an iMac or something down the road, but it feels like they're very happy to just go with it the way it is.
Yeah.
What would I? A new the framing of this is it's a new feature that we would actually make a bet about being there when it arrives.
That's a good question. I don't know if I have a good one.
They've knocked off a lot of those features that we talked about.
You could say, you could even throw a notch on Dynamic Island. That's a software thing, though. Dynamic Island on your MacBook.
I did say that. I could throw that out there, which is I think the Dynamic Island is going to be on all the iPhones this fall. I don't think they're going to hold it back.
Oh, I don't think. Yeah, I don't think so either.
There's a whole school of thought about that that
I don't think it's coming this year, but I think it is coming. The action button on all the Apple Watches. Mm-hmm.
I think it might be this year, but certainly
it
might be
this year. But I just don't know if they've gotten the time to sort of tool up all the way to producing it. But by next year, my guess is yes.
So Kevin, who's not a symphony, said, "Feel free to send me that extended keyboard. I won't mind."
I can't do that. It's Apple's.
This is our way. So somebody was asking, actually, is there a way for you to keep the Mac Mini that you've got and just buy it from Apple instead of having to buy one and transfer all your data again? And as somebody who has reviewed many laptops and then had to buy many laptops, there is no path to keep the review unit from Apple. There's no program to buy those out and keep them. You gotta wipe them and send them back. And the good news is
probably just as well.
The good news is often the review time frame is extended enough that you can get it, review it, get your thoughts together, put in an order, get your one that you own, transfer it, and have plenty of time to send the original back to Apple.
Yeah,
but you gotta send them back. They know. Believe me, there was one point when I left Macworld, I actually got an itemized list of things that were in my name, and they said, "Can you tell me if you have these, or if you don't, and send them back? And if you don't, say who has them." And it was a list of things, and I was like, "The Macworld Lab has all of these things. I don't have them. Talk to whoever is there." Is there anybody there? I don't know. And then I've definitely once a year ish, there's a clean out where I send stuff back throughout the year, but sort of at the end, I look and say, what else is here that belongs to Apple that they haven't asked for back yet? And I just get rid of that. I you know, put it all together. And they know all the serial numbers and all the air bills that are outstanding, because they'll send you a FedEx air bill and the whole thing. So we do have to send them back. I forget what this is. I think this date was pretty generous, wasn't it? Wasn't it like April?
Yeah. So people kept asking me what Mac Mini I bought. And I kept being like, having to, I'm still thinking about it. Now I can say I have this for a while, so I'm going to keep using it for a little while and get my thoughts together. And as Jason said, and then I will order.
You'll have time.
It doesn't seem as though they are particularly supply constrained at this particular moment. I haven't looked closely to see what the shipping times are, but my guess is probably not.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate everybody being here and asking us questions. I mean, I wish that with this video and our hands-on that we had the ability to show you like some dramatic change in the hardware, but like this MacBook Pro is exactly on the outside, exactly like the existing M1 MacBook Pros. They're the same. And the Mac Mini is the same way again. Yeah, there's a very slight size change, but otherwise, like, it's the ports you expect, it's the shape you expect, it's more or less the color you expect, although no space gray on the Mac Mini. So it's a very familiar, other than being able to stack like a MacBook Air on the 16-inch and tell you, and so you can see how huge it is. But like, and here's an M2 iPad Pro. So there you go. There's a whole Apple.
You get it all.
Here's my iPhone. You happy now? So there's a lot less about that. But the insides are interesting. But yeah, this is the... What would you say, Dan? I mean, it's like the big step was M1. M2 was never going to be revolutionary. This is incremental. Right. It is like by design, it's just meant to be keep pushing it forward and finish the transition with some new products like the Mac Mini that high-end one didn't exist before.
If you think about it, I mean, this is the traditional way that processor development has gone. Intel famously had their TikTok cycles, right, where they would every other year was sort of the process shrink, I feel like. And then the years in between were just sort of like stopgaps. And I think it feels like probably Apple has done that same sort of laddered development system where every other year is more of a bigger, because I think they said, it's the M3 that is that the 3-nanometer process that they're looking at there?
Yeah, there's a rumor that the M3 is based on the 3-nanometer process, which fits with my theory that the M3 is going to skip a generation of the A series, this current A generation that by all reports there was a GPU they were working on and that they didn't get in there. And whether it's a hybrid of those two or it's literally just a jump to the next set of cores, kind of unclear. They could use like the older cores for CPU and a newer GPU, but the current process is the second five, they call it four, but it's like the second 5-nanometer process on the A series chips on the A16. And a true 3-nanometer process would be a new process, presumably A17. I that's what I kind of think is that the new processor this fall will be the basis for the M3. And I'm skeptical of the rumors that the M3 Max will start rolling out this fall. It feels awfully abrupt, given that they've got to ship iPhones. But
yeah,
I mean, maybe not. We don't, you know, we are learning more about what Apple Silicon looks like now based on, you know, an iteration and a half or an iteration and 3/4. But we're not all the way there to understanding it. By the way, somebody asked, Jared asked about, do they make you send back the Apple Pencils? And like, I do try to send them back, but I also
don't want them.
Some of them don't go back because I can't find them or whatever. These are the first gen Apple Pencils. They did send me a new one. These sat with no charging for so long that they're completely dead. They won't charge. So I just need to recycle them, which is sort of tragic, but there we are.
Somebody asked about speccing trying to decide between, and they were, I guess, in the pounds, 32 gigabyte, 1 terabyte, mini or 32 gigabyte 1 terabyte Mac Studio, which of course we talked about a little bit, but I was just pricing them out because I was curious myself. And it turns out, yes, if you get the base M1 Max Studio with 32 gigabytes and 1 terabyte of storage, and you spec up the Mac Mini with the better processor, 32 gigabytes and 1 terabyte storage, so pretty close, They are both in the U.S. $21.99.
Right.
They are exactly the same cost.
But you're specking up the processor then.
Absolutely, because and it's still a little short. It's more cores, CPU cores, than the M1 Studio, but it's way fewer GPU cores.
Yeah,
because it's only 19 as opposed to.
And it's the
24.
What? It's the same number of performance cores.
It's the same number of performance cores because the higher M2 Pro has more performance cores.
I mean, you can.
Close.
You can get them to brush against each other, right? But it feels to me like they are still sort of like just. I mean, just touching or slightly overlapping, I feel like is actually a pretty good. Like, I feel.
There's going to be some.
They would have done this if there was a huge gap or there was a huge amount of overlap. We could have, I think, fairly say that they kind of did it wrong. It feels to me like they did it right. Like, you can find places where they touch, but that's about it.
So I think, honestly, what it comes down to there, if you're really trying to decide between those, is how much graphics work do you do? I think that is the main deciding factor. Is do you want those extra few CPU or GPU cores to really, you know, is that going to make a big difference for you? But I think there's also a question, ask yourself if you need that higher M2 Pro. It feels nice, but like, do you need that many cores? I think, Jason, you made a great point on Upgrade talking about the efficiency cores and the fact that it's like quad core efficiency cores. That's going to do a lot of what you're doing every day anyways. So that in some ways has a bigger benefit potentially than even like, you know, the stuff that only fires up when you're really doing intense work.
Right. Because so much of our time is downtime, right? When we're not doing a render or a Photoshop action or a logic bounce or something like that, and you're just sitting staring at your screen and maybe something's running in the background and maybe there's some services running, but there's so much of that can happen on those efficiency cores, and that's where you're going to get the power savings, and on laptops you're going to get the battery extension, is those efficiency cores are, because they're pretty good. At some point at the WWDC, they actually talked about how the efficiency cores are actually pretty fast.
Yeah,
they're just not as fast as those performance cores. Yeah. All right. It's top of the hour. We've been here for about an hour. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We're going to sign off. As always, go to sixcolors.com. If you're a member, check out the Discord. You can ask us questions there as well. And check out our podcasts. I just posted Upgrade, where we talked all about this. I imagine the Rebound, we'll be talking about
coming later this week.
And we also make many other podcasts, too. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jesus.